going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
We don't have to be apologetic for Shedeur Sanders not getting drafted. 32 teams didn't draft him. They got 6 more rounds left in this draft and the opportunity for him to go pro. Sometimes we have an affinity for these kids. Like Dan does breakdowns. Dominique, we've all been doing drafts for a long time. We want to see them live their dreams. We want to see them drafted where they want to be drafted. But that's not always the case. I wanted Lamar Jackson to be a top 5 pick. He ended up going 32nd. I love what Dan said. We are not in mourning. It happens every single year where somebody doesn't get drafted where people think they're going to get drafted.
Marcus Spears, you've said about how you love the draft for the moments, the celebrations, the culmination of the hard work, all the years, and here's the moment. And that obviously comes across with each pick in the first round. You see the joy and maybe some relief. But there also is this every year, you know, players who it's tough to watch sometimes. Sanders, I wouldn't say for me he was tough to watch exactly because there were a lot of people around him and he was not supposed to go in the top 5. Again, objectively, the betting markets are your guide. And while at the beginning of the draft process, he was talked about even like on a tier with Ward or above, that changed. So it was not surprising, I would say, that he wasn't picked last night. Now, tonight could be another thing if, like Adam Schefter said, it could be into the third round and then who knows. And that obviously significantly affects the player's chances of succeeding. You don't have the same level of investment from the team as you would with a first round pick where the guy would get every chance. So Sanders, what I was thinking about him last night, which is kind of adjacent to what you were saying, watching on ESPN, I was watching NFL Network, but I was in and out of it because I was on the ship chasing stream and I was watching that and sometimes listening and paying more attention to that. It felt like every time I looked at NFL Network, they were at the Shedeur Sanders party. It almost seemed like the draft was at that party.
Yeah.
Which it, you know, it wasn't, but yeah. There was a lot of coverage on him.
ESPN showed a fair amount of that party, but mostly, you can be uncomfortable watching a guy if they're, you know they're dropping and it's got to be heartbreaking and the family is there and maybe the mom is holding the son's hand or the girlfriend or whatever. Just like it's, you can tell it's tense, right? Most of the time ESPN cut, it was just it was an empty room. like a staged part of the. And I was like, okay, he's not even in there. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's not Thurman Thomas sleeping on the couch in 1988. Like, he's not even there. The whole thing was odd to an extent. I mean, I get he's, you know, a popular and famous name and is a quarterback to boot. So, you know, I got no beef with ESPN or any network focusing on him. Really, you know, what I was saying to start today, just the launch of the actual draft, like when Roger Goodell rides all the former Packers, they all ride bicycles out there. He says the 2025 draft is open. Tennessee is on the clock. They go to the desk, and there's your crew, right? It's Louis Riddick and Greenberg and Booger McFarland and Mel Kiper. And it just is, okay, Tennessee, they're going to pick Cam Ward. He's a, what, minus 2,000 or something?
20,000.
Right. It's like they're picking Cam Ward. And it's all just Sanders and Mel, and he's like yelling at you about how good Sanders is and my reputation and all these other guys that I've been right about and all this stuff. And it's like, this could be at like 10:30 when he hasn't been picked yet. Why are we doing this right now? Cam Ward, this is Cam Ward's moment. It just was awkward, I thought. And it made me feel uncomfortable for Cam Ward and for, I don't know, everyone else watching. Like, what, it just seemed inappropriate the way they handled that last night to me.
I will never remember any of that, but the Hunter trade is legendary at pick 2. And you did have a report from Jay Glazer that was going to happen before the draft started. I don't know what it sounded like. I was at the event for Carlin Hartman on Grand Island, his Hall of Fame induction there. So I couldn't hear anything. But I'm on Twitter, and there's the Glazer thing, and it's not even 8 yet. Mm-hmm. And like I saw Schefter talking. When was it? Was ESPN talking about the Hunter trade before the first pick? Or is it just about Sanders?
They didn't really start talking about Sanders that I saw. I wasn't glued to it before it started. I was watching hockey right up until like 5 to 8 or so. So I didn't get there until really, that's why it stood out to me that like my point of entry on the draft coverage was we're on the clock, and it was all about the guy that's not going to end up getting picked at all mm-hmm. day. So I don't know what went on before. So I'm not sure when Schefter said anything about the trade.
But right after Ward, that was announced.
Yeah.
Like there was no delay. And he's on the screen and there's the trade, mm-hmm. you know, logo on whatever. So that was done. And that's incredible. Jacksonville, we were talking about them this week. Like they're doing a lot of work trying to keep people guessing. And I don't know, maybe it was all legit. There was a report yesterday that might happen
mm-hmm.
early in the day. And we acknowledged it. But still. How about the Browns in that? I mean, that's really bold to trade away from that player. Would you have done it? I would have taken a lot of courage to trade him. The numbers people all heavily, I shouldn't say all, but mostly at least, heavily favor the Browns in the trade. The fact that he's not a quarterback, Kevin Cole, for one. The fact that Hunter is not a quarterback, you know, what they got for a player that can even pull off what he's hoping to pull off, playing at an elite level on both offense and defense. You make that trade every time. Now, maybe I saw Monson say, like, doesn't the fact that he is potentially two players change that? And a response that he got was, I think maybe from Brian Burke, who's in the analytics world, is that is the problem with trading up. That is the overconfidence in knowing that my guy is going to be all that is how you get into trouble. And there are countless examples of that. The question is, does Hunter count as an exception? Should there be an exception to that? I mean, I've kind of said for years that there shouldn't be an exception to that rule. Just, you know, swallow hard and accept that you don't know what you think you know here.
Well, the two-player thing, I've struggled with that all along. I mean, if people have been paying attention, the idea of him playing, like he did in college anyway, you know, I was, again, ESPN, Louis Riddick at one point is talking about how, you know, if he were to play full time in the NFL, it's going to be fewer plays than he was playing in college, because college, there's just more plays in college games, and so he's been playing like 120 or 140 snaps a game if he's playing full time on both sides of the ball, and then it'll be that much when you get to the NFL. And so, you know, it from a stamina standpoint, you could probably do it. I just think at some point you're going to – I don't know how early. I just would not settle for – because that was a lot of ESPN was – they got 2-for-1 here. And maybe it's 1.5 for one, I would say. You know, I think he certainly – they should try to use him on both sides of the ball. But I think you're going to have to focus on one at least to start to get him – up and running as like a wide receiver to run with Brian Thomas and make that work. And then this is my preference. Like, if I'm running the Jaguars, and this, my read of it is this, because, you know, Liam Cohen's the new head coach there, and the hotness of the idea for Jacksonville is pairing him with Brian Thomas Jr. and Trevor Lawrence and this new scheming play caller. So I need you to play receiver for me. And then, and I've said this a few times, like, sprinkle him in on defense, you know, like, depending on how the series on offense has gone. So I'd be stunned if ever, even this year, we're talking about a guy who is playing 80% of the snaps on both sides of the ball. I think that's nuts. I mean, even Deion never played that much on both sides of the ball. It was defense primarily and kick returning, and then the odd offensive series here or there. I think this will be the opposite of that, is what I would guess sitting here now. So there is value added. It is not just a great receiver. It is someone who should be able to help you situationally on the other side of the ball. I just don't think it's 2-for-1. You did not get a starting wide receiver and starting cornerback, I don't think, by making that trade.
Well, it was always not set up great for the Browns to draft their starting quarterback this year. It was probably going to have to be next year. You could get lucky with a Milroe or a Sanders, and maybe that'll still happen. But this trade gives them a huge advantage toward that. I mean, imagine a world where maybe Jacksonville isn't really good. So there's the first-round pick. Mm-hmm. Your own, you'll be bad probably. And then that pick, too, that's great. You have the second-round pick tonight as well. That was early, so the Browns have 2 of the first 4 picks tonight, I believe. So that's good. I think it's great for Cleveland. It's stunning, and it couldn't have been easy to decide to do it. I just kind of wish – this is how I felt about the Bills last year and when they traded down. I just wish they would have done one more thing. When they got to 33 and eventually picked Coleman, just, you have all day, and there have to be teams calling you about moving up because they've had all night to ponder this one guy they loved is sitting on the board. The Bills didn't take advantage of that. That's my opinion, at least. And the Browns at 5. Nobody was game for Jeanty at 5. That was the speculation all day, was Chicago was going to go to 5 and get Jeanty. And Jacksonville was going to go to 10. So there was no chance for the Browns to make the next move. And I don't think that would have been a first. Maybe 10-5, maybe a next year's first for that. I mean, that's a wild trade to make for a running back.
But yeah, yeah.
I mean, the betting markets reflected that was expected, that Jeanty would get to the Bears somehow, and they were picking 10th. The Raiders were also getting mocked to a lineman, Banks. Or Membo, one of the two linemen there, and less so often Jeanty. But anyway, the Browns do all that, and it's amazing in different ways, end up with a defensive tackle.
Yeah, from a fan standpoint, that might have been tough to – I'm imagining how we'd be reacting with the wide receiver train and all this if somehow the Bills had come to the second overall pick. And they go, yeah, we're going to get – and it's Travis Hunter. And we're going to get out of here, and we're going to draft a 310-pound dude.
Needs.
We go, what? What are you doing to us? You're right. Cleveland has pick 1 tonight and pick 4. Houston and Tennessee in between.
And Houston got that from the Giants.
Right.
There was also an incredible Rams-Falcons trade.
Yeah, the Falcons trade was amazing. I could not believe that included a first for next year. That was mind-boggling.
Maybe the Bills wouldn't have done it, but if they had had a chance at that, the Rams just say no or something, and they'd had a chance at that. Wow. What a gift. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We expect the Bills' first-round pick, Maxwell Hairston, to speak down at the stadium around 5. We're hoping to carry it live. We're planning to. And, of course, day two of the NFL draft tonight, getting going at 7 with that first Browns pick. Back after this here on WGR.
It's Mike Schoep.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I mean, it's kind of lame and funny, this Texans-Browns pick trade. You know, what was this again?
I already forgot it.
A fifth and a 27-fifth for 2 sixes and a seventh. Everything but the one 2027 pick is in this draft, which starts tonight. However, I'll say this about it. The Browns had 10 picks, and the Texans had 7. And the net result, if that's not redundant, the result of this trade is Cleveland goes from 10 to 8, and Houston goes from 7 to 9. Both teams, how does this trade get made? Who even thinks of it? Both teams didn't think their number was optimal. So Cleveland says, I'll give you late ones for one better one and a pick in 2 years. And Houston says, okay, because we don't have the pick haul in the back half of the draft on Saturday. So that works. And nobody has any idea who the players are going to be.
Right.
But they took care of, the two teams took, they mutually took care of, something about their draft capital that wasn't quite right for them. And I say all this because of the point that you've made a lot and people have heard a lot, that the Bills having 10 picks, the same number as Cleveland had until 20 minutes ago, is maybe more than they need. So the problem with the Bills picks, though, unlike the Browns, is the Bills picks are not as late. The Browns have a seventh here. The Bills don't have a seventh at all. And what do they have, 1/6 or 2? I have to reset
I'm pretty sure they have more than 1/6 and maybe more than 1/4?
I think they have 3/5.
Oh, okay, I'm way off.
2/4, 3/5, 2/6.
Okay, multiple in all three of those rounds, but no sevens.
Yeah, so if they wanted, it's not original anymore because the Browns just did it, but if they wanted to do the same thing, with somebody, find a team that needs picks like the Vikings, and what would it be? You trade two of your, I'm going to say five, so I don't have to say fifths every single time. 2 5s and the late sixth for like a fourth and a seventh, something like that, or a future pick. You could do that. You don't even need any picks here. You can just take two of those and see if you can find somebody who will give you a pick in the future. Would that be good? I don't know. Is that good? If you don't like 10, then do something about it.
Right.
Maybe the Bills do like 10.
I doubt that they like 10. I think they like having the picks, I think, because it will give them flexibility. And I just don't think they will draft more than 8 players this weekend, obviously starting tonight. So, sure. it is a way to divest yourself of some picks and get someone, more in the mid-tier of the draft, which, again, I'm not going to make the point about the plateau extending that far into Saturday, deep into Saturday or something, but, you're going to get a better guy if you get a fourth, then you're probably going to get drafting all of those later picks that were, two-fifths and whatever they've got, three-fifths. I can't say it either. Shocker.
Three-fives.
Fifths. 2 6s. Yeah, I always had trouble with my S's. I went to therapy when I was a kid.
The S is the problem. It's not hard to say fifth round.
No problem at all. Fifth round, easy. Fifths.
That's not as easy.
I'll stop.
Well, here we go. I mean, it's less than 3 hours away now. The Bills at pick 30. it's been the conversation every day for a long time. What is it? Cornerback, defensive line, maybe there's a third position like wide receiver or even running back, dare I say it, that should be mentioned as a possibility. Linebacker, right? With safety. Could all you those are all positions that have been used in mock drafts. And maybe I could find one where they picked a quarterback or a guard or something, but I have not seen it.
Right. No, I have never seen an offensive lineman tied to the Bills. Now, I haven't read through any 7-round mocks. I mean, I just have not sat down and done that.
Really?
No.
That's
just
surprising.
Just not going to do it. I want to stop short of saying I refuse to do it, but I haven't felt the need to do it, so I haven't done it. But yeah, linemen, I just don't see offensive linemen just at all. And it makes sense. I mean, that's not to say they won't grab one. You know, if they end up drafting 8 players, maybe one of them is, a tackle or a guard or someone that they can stash away and develop. But they have already kind of a stable of those guys to begin with. And I say you wouldn't want to add to it. So I'm not saying they won't pick one, but with any kind of a premium pick, that would shock me. I want to say even more than a linebacker, because they're kind of all set right now. If they trust that someone from the stable of backups could take over for a David Edwards if he ages out or gets hurt or whatever. And, you know, Deion Dawkins is not, you know, he was drafted the year before Josh Allen, right? So, you know, we're going to get there eventually with Deion Dawkins, but I don't need someone on deck there. I know there's always injury, but again, they've got a stable of backups. So I think an offensive lineman would shock me more than even running back.
Me too.
Or even linebacker. Because linebacker, at least you do have Milano, maybe like the redone contract. He's done after this year. Bernard has been injury, you know, he's had his share of injuries. I want to stop short. Maybe you notice I stopped myself from saying injury prone. Mm-hmm. But he's missed here or there, nicks and whatever. So, you know, getting another guy, if it were to fall right, I wouldn't like it, but it would not stun me the way an offensive lineman would. I just do not see an offensive lineman until Saturday, into the thing Saturday afternoon.
Of course, the easiest way... Like I want to say, I don't think it should be a goal exactly for the Bills to want to lessen their amount of draft picks. I still think the main point is not how many of your draft picks would have a realistic chance of making the team. I mean, if you have picks in the 6th round, you know, I know Benford happened, so did Tom Brady, but the odds aren't great no matter how many you have. I mean, the Bills are a good team with a deep, pretty good roster. So needless to say, the easiest way, though, to change that is to trade up. That's what you do. Minnesota, we talked about this already, but you would think they're sitting there with 4 draft picks going, can we find our way to a couple more? How do we do that? I don't know what their needs are exactly. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the Vikings, but I mean, they had a great season. And if they're pretty neutral on, you know, who they need from this draft, they're absolutely a perfect candidate to make a trade like this. And this is about the cost that it would be, I would guess, 24 to 30 for one of the 4s and one of the 5s. That's about right by this draft tech chart. The Bills could go from 10 to 8 in terms of total draft picks by moving up 6 spots in the first round.
And it's a 4 and a 5.
Yeah, about.
Now, you've said before this chart is often a little light.
I think so.
All right.
But you don't have a 3rd.
Yeah.
And that's the round where you would – that's the easier fit, I think. A 2nd round is pretty rich. But they don't have a 3rd. I think that's significant.
Yeah, I do too. And that price – that to me is not a price that Brandon Bean would balk at.
No, I agree.
Now, it does, you know – I don't want to just, you know, flip them, you know, senselessly, and not that that would be that, but it might reduce your flexibility on Saturday if you make that move, because you're depleting 2 of those, and that might make it harder to move around on Saturday. But what are you doing it for on Thursday, right? I mean, if you're going from 30 to 24, it's because there is a corner that you really like. There is a D tackle that you really like. Maybe 30 to 24 gets you Kenneth Grant.
That's right.
Maybe 30 to 24 gets you the third best corner.
That's right. The Rams are 26, and they are said to want a cornerback.
And it could even get you like a better edge rusher than you would get if you stay at 30. Could get you Matthew Golden if you want to do receiver. Maybe. Certainly, I don't want to say anything is certain because it's not. We don't know how the order is going to go. But it feels to me like one of those things would be true. Like one of those things is likely to happen, that one of those guys is in that range.
Yep.
And so now that simply becomes a matter of, do the Bills like the guy? When they sat with him, does he check all Bills DNA and all that stuff, right? If those players I just mentioned match up with what they always are looking for, I could see them paying that price to go from 30 to 24. And I could see you not loving it. And
definitely me, could
and
see
me not,
it.
And me not caring that much.
Yeah.
And being excited, especially if it was for like Matthew Golden is my favorite idea at receiver. Just don't think it's attainable, so I haven't really like invested in it emotionally.
But McMillan might be. I don't know if you want him. Some guessers have him falling.
Yeah.
Ibuka. And, of course, Omarion Hampton needs to be mentioned here. I have to be careful because I have, for many years, been opposed to this kind of strategy. Like, it's easy. It's a simple argument. It never changes. You don't know, right? You said it in your discussion there, your commentary there, the better edge rusher. That's the point. I mean, you don't know who's actually going to be better. We've got countless examples of being wrong about that. So just give me the more bullets, so to speak. As I get more attached to names, as we have spent months talking every day about these names, I want to make sure I don't get attached. Like, oh, well, if I don't make this is what happens to the Bills. This is what happens to teams. If I don't make this move, I'm not getting Amos because the Rams will take him. If I don't make this move, I'm not getting Dalton Kincaid because Dallas will take him. If I don't make this move, I'm not getting Kyer Elam. I know I'm not trying to leave out the good ones, right? Allen was right. Obviously a trade-up, and almost nothing else matters. You don't know it at the time, but once you draft Allen, go for it. And that's always part of the argument that gets made
and the
about
jury
trading
is,
up.
The jury is still to some extent out on Kincaid. I mean, it's been 2 years, and it was injuries last year. So I want to give him this year before I start really saying that did not turn out, because he did catch 73 balls as a rookie.
Fair enough. He's still on the team, unlike Elam.
Right, right. But it hasn't looked great. It hasn't smashed at all. There's no argument there. What do you think happens in my house if they go from 30 to 24?
Ooh, this is a good question.
And well, I already said it's not going to be Paul Tagliabue. I think the Bills have a guest to announce the pick.
You mean Goodell?
What did I say?
Tagliabue.
Wow.
You're I'll give you a pass on that.
What happened
because
there?
We were talking about commissioners today.
No. I haven't said Tagliabue's name in 30 years. What the hell was that?
We have some draft fatigue.
Is this
here.
Where I want to tell you that walking in today, when I reached for my fob, I grabbed my car keys, and it did not last. I'm taking way longer to even say it. I looked at my car keys for a second and thought to click a button to get in the door here. I got over it quickly, but it shook me. I was like, oh, God, is this the start of something? And now this Tagliabue thing on top of it. Now I'm scared. Anyway, what the hell was I saying? Oh, what happens in my house when it's not going to be Gary Bettman? It's not going to be Goodell, this person the Bills have chosen. Goes up there and says...
Somebody's representing the Bills to announce their pick.
And announces the pick. The Bills draft safety Nick Emmanuel from South Carolina. After moving up from 30 to 24, I'm going to stop short of saying I'm running naked in the streets, but I might be naked in my house. I might be just running around, doing loops around my foyer, kitchen, dining room, living room, like Owen and I did when the Sabres won the Darlene lottery. We were both clothed.
It would be a fun. It would be a fun player to talk about.
Yeah.
Here's Jeff with us. Hi, Jeff.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Great.
So I was going through the last bits of the mocks from a bunch of the online guys, and I was surprised to see about four or five of these drafts had Will Johnson, the corner from Michigan, falling to 30 to the Bills.
Yep.
Which I found odd because for all offseason, he seemed to be like the number one guy off the board, a top 12 pick. And then they had about five guys today have him be the third guy off the board behind Harrison and Barron. And I'm just wondering, you know, it seems weird on draft that all of a sudden he's falling.
It might be a function of teams leaking to reporters that they're worried about something. It's medical on him. There were injuries this year. You mentioned specifically what they were. I had them confused. I had him confused with Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame. He's another corner that has been hurt. He's got a hip injury that I think teams might, I've read a few times, they might be worried that it's, you know, a thing that he might have a shorter career because of, kind of thing, right? And Johnson is different injuries than that. It's not as threatening, like career longevity wise, but he was dinged up.
It was a little confusing to me reading about it, like a hamstring injury that might have been knee related or something, and he had turf toe. So I don't know, Jeff, but you're right to have seen it.
Yeah.
In fact, I have Evan Silva's mock draft in front of me. He doesn't have Johnson going in the first round. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get the guy if you know, he stays healthy, but it was just weird to see that big of a drop, you know, from all offseason to on draft day.
Right. And that's our explanation is the best we've got for that. I don't know if it has to be right. You can obviously also find mock drafts where he goes, you know, maybe in the top 10 even.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it stated very definitively. Again, that doesn't make it fact. It's still, you know, different draft analysts' opinion. But if he didn't have any injury concerns, he'd be the first corner picked.
Other than Hunter,
right. He'd be ahead of the Texas guy. He'd be the guy. But there is some fear about his injury.
So Evan has Hairston at 23, Amos at 26, Barron, the Texas guy, Jahdae Barron, at 29, and no Will Johnson. Just one effort.
And what does he have the Bills doing in that scenario?
Matthew Golden,
right.
He had a wide receiver for them one he did.
I lowered my voice there. I'm getting like Barry White territory, Matthew Golden.
Didn't Evan have a receiver going to the Bills in the first one he did? We talked about it with him.
Maybe it was Burden?
Maybe it was Burden. Yeah, I think it was Burden.
That might have been what turned you on to him in the first place. Because I know you think so highly of Evan.
I do, yes. Maybe it was. Ibuka to Baltimore in this mock. 27. Then Golden to the Bills. What do you think for Baltimore? Baltimore will pick somebody and everybody, no pun intended, will rave about it. Oh, what value.
Right, because they're so smart.
I think that's often been proven right.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, no, I wasn't. Whatever.
Other times, there was a story, this came up on ADP chasing, I got to remember it. When they picked Isaiah Likely, which was not a first round pick, whatever year this was, the Steelers took, is it Calvin Austin? Might that have been right? The Steelers took somebody right in front of them. This was like on video. I have not seen it. Mm-hmm. But the story goes something like this. The Steelers took a player right in front of them. They were just, it's the middle of the draft. They're just assuming they're going to get him. And they can't. He's picked right in front of them. And they like had no idea what to do. And somebody says, it was Greg Roman was there. And maybe, as I remember the story being told to me, somebody like, Harbaugh turns to Roman. Who was that tight end you liked? Or something like that. Isaiah Likely. Because they'd already picked a tight end in that draft.
It's amazing.
There's three times in recent years where Baltimore picked two tight ends in the same draft. Mm-hmm. And all three times, the second guy was better. When they picked Andrews, they'd already picked Hayden Hurst. And by the way, they picked Lamar Jackson in between Hayden Hurst and Andrews. And then this was Charlie Kolar and Likely, and there's a third example with Baltimore where they did the same thing.
What number are they picking again?
27.
I like them for a running back.
I don't hate it.
I mean, Derrick Henry is not going to live forever. And nothing. And that's it. So you're probably looking at another year, two at most, I think, of like optimal Derrick Henry. I don't know, maybe he's the freak show in a body that big that just is so durable that he lasts and lasts and lasts. I don't know. But I could see them doubling down on that position anyway. Not with draft picks, but you know what I'm saying? Like loading up is really a better way to phrase it.
They have 11 picks.
So I don't know. I could see them being drawn to that.
A lot of teams where I think that argument is right, I think it should be day two, though, because of the many options you have. I would predict it for day two for Baltimore. They just have their regular picks at that 27 slot for the first four rounds, and then they're a little bit all over the place when we get to Saturday. 803-0550, the draft starts tonight, round one, 8 o'clock. Thanks for joining us today and all through this very lengthy pre-draft discussion that's been going on for months. We will continue it after the update here on WGR.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so that my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good in it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need a spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
All right, we're back. Day two of the draft tonight. The Bills, as you surely know by now, select Max Hairston from Kentucky, cornerback, and doing that, I mean, I guess you could say for them, it was not an eventful night. They sat still. Not a lot really was going on, period. But you had a couple trades there, 6-7 picks ahead of the Bills, but yeah. Otherwise there was just the Hunter trade, which was spectacular at the beginning. The Bills do the thing. They needed a cornerback. Now we know, needless to say, how they ranked Hairston versus Amos, others who right. were not picked.
Right. Yeah. So, sensible pick. And now we'll just wait and see what happens. My favorite thing about it is that I feel like I talked more about Amos late yesterday. I compiled a list, I think, during the break at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Trade up candidates. I had a handful of names, and then stay put candidates. And Amos and Hairston were the first two names there. And I thought about Amos largely because of he was a little taller, and there were comparisons to Tre'Davious White, and I'd seen him mocked to them often. I didn't really think about, and Hairston largely, if I saw him in mock drafts, was, unlike Amos, picked usually earlier. So I thought there'd be more likelihood of Amos being there. But anyway, I really like the speed factor. Like, I feel like the Bills have sort of taken, it feels like a little bit of a departure for them, because I don't know that this guy checks every box necessarily. Like, the tackling is seems like it's a concern. I think it's a legitimate concern. He's a little light and is bounced off. I'm watching reels of highlights of him making some tackles and missing some tackles. I mean, I guess, a lot of guys are going to miss their share of tackles. They're going to be 100% on that. But I like that they prioritized getting someone fast. Because even though it's not on offense, I think overall this team has not been, for all their success, ever really a fast team on either side of the ball. So I like that they, I think it feels to me like they prioritize that with this pick over someone 3 inches bigger and a little heavier and maybe with a reputation for being a more sure tackler like Amos.
It gives us a chance to sit with a word that is fun to say all off season. Twitchy.
Yeah.
He's twitchy.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure is a word I ever have heard in any other context. But football players can be twitchy. So we got it. We got one of them. I think, you know, there was no trade. I wonder how close they even came. They might have, for a minute, been offered a trade down. But you had the Giants. The Giants acted quickly. They went to 25.
Right.
So that didn't drag on to the point where the Bills were a player for that. And then you had Kansas City and Philadelphia flip past the Bills. But I don't know. I don't know how close they came, whether there was anything they would have considered at 30. If there were, I mean, I'm going to say this, right? If there were, I'd probably do it. But, A, I don't know how much of a gap they would have had between Hairston and these other guys. There's no B.
Yeah.
In this case. It's just that you would have had Revelle too.
Mm-hmm.
In the early second round, you would have probably had a choice, depending on where the trade landed you, of one of these corners. There was no reason to ever consider trading up for one. And Grant and Nolan went so early.
So that was over.
Right? Even Sal's guy, Williams.
Yeah, yes, right.
They all went so early that there was not that either. They might have had designs on a move up for a corner, a move up for a defensive tackle, a move down with the Giants or something, and just maybe none of it really came close to happening.
It feels like that might have just gotten taken away from them if they were inclined to want to do it at all. And, yeah, I think I said a few times yesterday, talking to Sal and just you know, amongst ourselves here, that seemed to me very possible, and I'd stop short of saying it was likely. I mean, it happened already, but the guys that have the, you know, more than one club in the bag, so to speak, you know, big, you know, defensive tackles that can get up the field, I felt like the Eagles' performance in the Super Bowl, how they shut down Mahomes, was going to result in guys who can do that going sooner rather than later. And so, in Grant in particular, you've got someone who they might be betting on him being able to do both, because he's got the big body, but he's got really light feet, and seems like there's maybe the potential for him to round into someone who can be that. And I thought teams would prioritize that. So, yeah, the Bills are sort of left with, as far as defensive tackle goes, you know, it's really just, I mean, there are still quick guys left. But they're not big, and so really you're left with 340-pound space eater guys. And you should be able to get a guy, if that is still something they consider to be a need, it is not likely to be an upfield presence of any kind, really, but that is still someone as a rotational piece that could help them. And something I think we agreed on I did not want them to spend a first-round asset on someone who wasn't more than just that, because it feels to me like Saturday even is full of guys that fit that profile. If you're looking for someone to play 40%, 30% of the snaps in Daquan Jones's place, you can find that somewhere later on. You don't have to pay a premium for it. The premium is can I get a guy that can do both? And those guys, like we just said, I mean, Grant, I was stunned how early he went off the board. The guy thought he was maybe a guy that could get to, you know, the region of the draft that we talked about yesterday as not, you know, unattainably like gettable trade spots. You know, Minnesota 24, Pittsburgh 21. Maybe you can swing that if he gets there. But, I mean, he was, what pick was he?
13.
13.
Miami.
Holy cow. Right. So he didn't really have a look at that at all.
Right. That's left unanswered, I think, just how maybe it was answered and I missed it. How close they might have been, you know, everything we talked about, comparing those two position groups, you know, having names for each. And as last night plays out, it's the corners that fell. That's not even really falling. It's just that we're there. Johnson, it was considered a fall.
Yeah, I mean, he's all the way out of the first round.
Emin Wari wasn't drafted.
Right.
This, I think, is just a function of this particular draft and how interchangeable, if you will, picks seemed between like 10 and then the fringe of the first round into the second round. There are, I mean, I'm not even the most knowledgeable about it, but there are at least 10 names on the board right now that we talked about,
yeah,
you know, at different times.
And, we
not,
said,
and not just the running backs. We, I don't even, right, not even including right, running backs.
We thought that would happen, right? I mean, that there would be guys that got picked yesterday. There were a couple. The lineman from North Dakota, I don't think it was not a name that I ever really said myself. I'm sure I saw it in mock drafts somewhere. But
that'd be Gray Zabel?
Yeah. That's just not a name that I never said, anyway, in the run-up to this. And, you know, we do say a lot of names.
But he wasn't, I mean, he wasn't considered a reach either.
Right, right.
He just wasn't. He's an offensive lineman, and right, the Bills were
we
not
didn't spend any
one
time thinking about that, right. But that there would be names. You know, there were going to be guys left over here. And that, yeah, there are some notable ones. I mean, a lot of the time, it depends on who you talk to, but most of the time because I was crushing on Emin Wurry for months here on end, whenever he would come up, be like, yeah, you're probably not even going to really have a look at him. You know, even a trade up idea, he might be too far, like kind of where Grant went, like, you know, in the teens before the 20s, even a lot of the time that was how he was talked about. And he's tumbled all the way out. And maybe teams don't trust that he can play a position. You know, I mean, there are Lewis Cine comes to mind. He was here with the Bills last year and working as a linebacker after being drafted in the first round out of Georgia as this sort of freaky athlete safety guy, and he's never really found a home in the league.
Nope.
And I wonder if teams were scared off by even that comparison. But there was plenty of people who thought he would. You know, I heard Greg Cosell again today on my way in on his usual Friday 2 o'clock spot with Steve and Chris on One Bills Live. So like, I still think he was the best safety in the draft. Can do everything you want to do. So, you know, differing opinions, but obviously the league saw something. I did read on him, and I'll close up shop on him for now at least, because he is still out there. Maybe the Bills could land him tonight. Who knows how far he'll fall. That his grades at PFF against all the good teams in the SEC were pretty bad. Like he got fat playing against, you know, the weaker links in the SEC. And maybe that's something that scared, you know, how's he playing against Alabama, right? How's he look against, you know, the powerhouse teams? And if it goes badly, that, you know, that's not a good sign for the NFL.
Well, I have to decide whether I want to care about on-field performance. I've got a guy who can lift and run really fast. It's a lot of names, but for the most part, this doesn't really mean anything. This is just like based on our conversations and my reflections on the last few months talking about the draft all the time. It's not so many names that when you get to 56, the Bills' first pick tonight, as it stands now, that any of those guys are still there probably. Who are they? Emin Wurry, my guy Luther Burden,
mm-hmm,
maybe, but maybe not. Mike Green, we had a caller earlier this week, maybe even yesterday, about trading up for Mike Green, and he had a mock draft, and I looked at one where he went 15th, did not get picked. You're not in play for a corner now, probably, having drafted one, but there's Johnson, there's Amos, there's Revelle. I heard the name Nick Skirton enough times, yep, an edge rusher. Ezeraku was
right,
one. He was mocked the Bills numerous times.
Yep.
He wasn't drafted. Of course, all the Sanders, I mean, the quarterbacks, Sanders and Milrow, maybe they both go before the Bills pick, but they're not a candidate for them. And running backs and other receivers, you got a pile of them. Ends up just two running backs last night. I say just because there was just lots of talk about maybe Travion Henderson or someone else. I mean, two in the modern age here, two running backs in the first round is not a small number, but that's what we got. So Henderson lasted. Judkins from Ohio State, and you've got that as well. There's a linebacker named Schwesinger from UCLA that right, we talked about for a minute. You know, probably because it's like this, somebody from that list is on the board for the Bills at 56. But if you wanted to, you know, talk about moving up, trying to do that, you can, because I think a lot of teams right now would feel like a player or two or five that they loved are available.
Yeah. And the Bills do have, I mean, I'm not eager for them to part with one of the, you know, they have an extra second. So the flexibility to move if they really wanted to, I think is there for them. You know, I don't know how they go about getting back into the third round without sacrificing a bunch of, like, you would just have a large gap in the draft if you packaged up enough stuff, if somebody would even be interested in taking all of that to get back in the third. But the extra second, you know, if they're crushing on one of these big guys or an edge guy or something that they see great value in, when it gets to, say, I mean, I don't know, it could start right away here, but in the 40s somewhere, maybe, I don't know how modest a move up would cost, you know, a 6 spots. It's not really that modest, I guess, when you get right down to it. Maybe that's in play tonight. But, yeah, I think if they sit where they are, I feel like, I mean, again, corner, you just said it. Corner is not something I'm going to be that interested in tonight, so I'm not really worried about how quickly they come off the board. I guess I might want to hope that they do go, because that will maybe push edge guys or receivers or safeties or whatever down to where the Bills are at 56. But it feels to me like if you've got edge guys that were fringe first rounders, boy, the chances of them making it through 24 picks or whatever you got to sift through to get to the Bills today, that feels like a long shot sitting here. I wonder how the Bills feel about it. I wonder how Brandon Bean feels about it. Like, I wonder if the wheels are turning over there about trying to find their way to, like, an Isaraku or somebody. Because I would right now want to bet against that guy in particular. Like, someone who is thought to be maybe a first-round edge player, making it to 56 doesn't seem
realistic
to me.
I agree, and I could totally see the Bills wanting to get up for them. And I would include Green, I think, in the same context.
Sure.
You know, I could totally see them wanting to do that. Not having a third could make that challenging, because that's such a, for flexibility's sake, as I've said a lot, I think important to have, and they don't have their third round pick. Just the 2 seconds as of now for tonight, 56 and 62. Did you know who the Bills had picked before you watched Goodell announce it?
I did not. I went dark on that front, because I was seeing a lot of the picks most of the night. There was one account, I think it was a Fox reporter, that had picks. It seemed really early. Like, as soon as the pick was on the TV and they're in commercial, or, you know, I don't know, Goodell's riding around on a bicycle or whatever, you know, whatever all the other stuff that they were doing there was to entertain the apparently 200,000 people that stood up there to watch that. Okay. I'm not sneezing at it. The Bills want to host this thing. I don't know. pull in 200,000 people. It's amazing to me to stand out there and watch that event. But, yeah, I kind of didn't want to find out on Twitter, I guess, is the only way I can say it. I just thought, yeah, you know, I've made it this far. I'm awake. I'm just going to close up everything else and just watch the TV and wait for them to announce the pick. So that's how I found out.
I had a friend who was there with her husband, and they went in the stadium. You could go in the stadium, too, yep, and then back out. So I guess it's raining there today. She said she's not going to go tonight, but maybe tomorrow. So looked pretty great. I was on the ship-chasing stream brought on to talk about the Bills and, you know, celebrate the draft, I guess. And so they come on the clock. I'm looking at Twitter because I wanted to know before they did. You know, like, I'm there to analyze the pick, and I didn't want them to tell me who was going to be. This sort of a running thing I have with them.
I get that.
Where my Wi-Fi is slow, and I'm on with them during Bills games, like night games, and they'll know what happened. That game in Miami last year, I did this, and I was like 5 plays behind. It was just the worst. Mm. So I wanted to, you know, not be late. And the first thing I saw, I had 6S for 6 seconds from when I had refreshed, was Ray Davis last night.
Oh, okay.
Do you see what he did? So Ray Davis's tweet, this is like whether the pick was in or not. Nobody had it yet publicly. But he tweeted a string of eyeballs.
Okay.
And I went on the stream, I went, uh-oh. Because, you know, I was having fun with the running back idea, right? So then we had a fun conversation about, well, would Ray Davis know the pick before Adam Schefter or whoever? Like, would he be in the, you know, in the inner circle of this.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not if it's another running back, but if it's a player from his school, right?
Well, that is what came to fruition, I think. Yeah. Is I didn't. I wish I'd thought of that, because you know, after it went, one of my guys, Jacob, said, "Do we really think Ray Davis would be in on the conversations before?" Like, you know, no, probably. And if it were a running back pick, would that be Davis's reaction immediately? Like, just basically calling out the team or anything like that? You've already got Cook in his situation, so probably not. But for that's what my reaction to it was. Like, oh, wow. Is this going to be Travion Henderson? Is this really happening, right? Cook is traded or something. Like, what does Davis know? What he would have known from the player, probably, that a Kentucky teammate of his was being drafted by the Bills. So that was exciting for a minute. Most of the night for me was watching that stream with NFL Network on, kind of going back and forth by volume. It's very tough. I said this yesterday. We know this. It's tough to enjoy it like you want to be able to with Twitter, because Twitter is going to be there first, and somebody is going to say the pick. Like Schefter and the like, they don't do it. They used to.
Right.
And then we put a stop to that. So that doesn't happen. But Kostos, right, yesterday, we had him on, Nick Kostos, on Wednesday. And I commented how this is funny to me that this happens with him and me. His favorite draft bet was Loveland to be tight end one. And I've said many times that was mine, like 5-1 odds. And it was lower than that by Wednesday. But that was my – I didn't bet it. I didn't go – even if I'd gone to Pennsylvania, I would have been disappointed.
You wouldn't have been able to do it there.
You can't bet it there either.
You keep going to West Virginia, and now you're on vacation.
Classic bet. My betting life is having it but winning nothing. So he and Benjamin Solak, too, had Loveland, you know, tight end one tweets – way before that was announced, like several minutes before that was announced. And I never saw it. I went looking. I even tweeted on Nick's tweet. I went looking for, like, who said it so that they know, and couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. It's just tough to enjoy that aspect of the draft, which you really want to. I mean, that's really a fun way to enjoy the draft.
Yeah.
But you kind of always know, not often, not always by a long time, but Goodell is spoiled, basically, in the end, by Twitter. Nevertheless, it's a fun night.
Yeah.
There have been more fun draft nights.
Yeah.
The Hunter trade is spectacular.
That was incredible.
That was incredible.
I recognize that, you know, I think both things are true. I think Cleveland did a great job getting the haul they got. You know, we'll see about the player they picked. And I would understand a Cleveland fan being, you know, it's not a guard, right? I mean, a defensive tackle that penetrates, like that's picked fifth, that, you know, has some playmaking ability is not the, you know, least sexy defensive pick or pick you can make. But you went from taking this one-of-a-kind unicorn dude to trading out of there to taking a lineman. There's a bit of a thud there. But for Jacksonville, I've been mostly sort of skeptical about them and their new coach. But, man, that dude on the field with Brian Thomas Jr. and that guy drawing up plays, I tweeted last night, like, I might be ready to take them seriously. Like that offense. I mean, I know they're gonna have to figure out other stuff too. But man, that's a hell of a start with those two dudes running routes.
It's a great move. It's what makes one thing that makes the draft so great is we will have that to look back on forever. Like what happens with Travis Hunter and Mason Graham.
Yep.
And whatever Cleveland has an early pick tonight from this trade, the first next year. I mean, that's so much fun. Is to look back on these big draft trades and analyze them. And some of them are legendary, you know, just good and bad. Good in one direction and bad in the other. Often that's what happens. We talked about Watkins yesterday. We will talk about Watkins every year because of the magnitude of that and just how it can either make your franchise or wreck it. And, you know, often it's in between. But that's a brave move by the Browns. That is a brave move because Hunter is so, so cool. All right, next, Sam Paniatovich from Bet Sweats. We'll get his take on round one. Mix in a little playoff talk, too, NHL, NBA. Sal Capaccio joins us at 4, and then again right before, we turn over coverage for round two. He'll join us. The plan is around 6:30. We might have Max Hairston on live from the stadium, his press conference, which is scheduled right now anyway for around 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Another great day ahead. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here with Sammy P next on WGR.
From several different sources telling me there are teams who are looking to get up in this draft to either the 2 or the 3 spot. The assumption being to move up to the 2 or the 3 spot, it would be for Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, or Ashton Jeanty, who everyone expects to go somewhere in that 5 to 7 to 8 range. There have been teams making calls, and those teams are not immediately slamming down the phone. The Browns at 2, the Giants at 3.
He's ready.
Peter Schrager. One thing I thought was interesting about the Roto-World discussion I mentioned earlier on their podcast with Drew Dinsick was he sounded like a guy with a lot of experience handicapping the draft, and how Schrager and a couple other longtime analysts, Daniel Jeremiah worked for teams, I think. The guys you hear referenced a lot, maybe the most, for like, all right, this guy, if anybody knows, mm-hmm. this one knows, have backed off of, you know, scoops, kind of like you said before about yourself, succumb to the draft, to the machine. So what does it mean when the Browns and the Giants are not exactly slamming down the phone? Does it mean anything?
No.
It doesn't mean anything, right?
I think as we get closer today, I feel like every day I'm in the business of, looking for content, anything that's, you know, germane to our conversations about the draft. And I feel like today is the day that the smoke is getting really thick. It's like there's more injury concerns about this guy and that guy. And like that almost always to me, my default mechanism is that's teams that want the guy to fall. They're just hoping against hope. And I don't have to be – I probably have been right about that sometimes, but it's probably not right all the time, but I always think that's just garbage.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yes, and on that same show, they talked about Jacksonville. Did you notice yesterday it was Jeanty, and then it was someone else, then it was someone else. You know, Jacksonville just trying to push
– yeah,
trying to get their phone to ring. On our phone is Nick Kostos here on the Western Hotline from You Better You Bet. Nick, thanks for joining us.
What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
We are doing great. I am both drafted out, but I know by Tuesday I'm going to miss it. It's just been every day here since the playoff loss, and you know it's time for it to get here.
I completely agree. And even from my perspective, right, as someone who's trying to like figure out this puzzle so I can bet it, try and like slot the guys in properly. You know, the draft is not like, just from a betting perspective, the draft is not like a game, right, where you can have an opinion on a game and the game starts and maybe you're right or maybe a player gets hurt or the ball bounces a certain way or the referee makes a bad call. The draft is like, do you have the goods or do you not? Like, do you know what the general manager is going to do, or do you not? And I think where people can get in trouble thinking about the draft is, well, I think that like Travis Hunter is the best player in the draft, so the Titans should draft him, so that's what I'm going to bet. So, well, like, they're going to draft Cam Ward. So they can do things that you disagree with, and that's where you kind of have to suspend your opinion from stuff and just try to figure out, what is this team going to do, as opposed to, here's what I would do if I were in charge of this team.
And it's mostly, too, just playing the market, right? Like, we can't bet the draft in New York, go to Pennsylvania. But if I have an idea, by the time I get the hour and a half into Pennsylvania, if it's based on something, the market's moved. Like, you have to sort of be right or wrong. You kind of have to be staring at it all the time and then reacting to whatever might be causing certain line movement.
Well, I would say, you know, driving to Pennsylvania, I would say would be a foolish thing to do. You just know someone in Pennsylvania and send a text. I got people in New Jersey. I'm in New York also. Different. I'm in New York City. Send a text to someone in Jersey. Send a text to somebody in Connecticut and be able to get some stuff down.
That's fair.
I would say for the most part, as far as market moves are concerned, I'll give you an example. And this is like the bet does not have to win. So this is going to sound like I'm touting myself here. Like the bet has not won. It may not win. You know, 2 weeks ago on You Better You Bet, we were talking about Colston Loveland being the first tight end selected over Tyler Warren at a big price. Peter Schrager of ESPN, who does an awesome job for them, tweets on Sunday night, like, don't be surprised if Colston Loveland goes earlier than expected, and the market moves off of that. Now, these are not high limits, right? So, like, you can't bet as much on an NFL draft pick as you can, like, a game, right? That's not how this goes, so it doesn't take a ton, like to move the market, really.
Right.
But, yeah, it's just, like, being able to get ahead of stuff before, like, Mel Kiper says on ESPN, I'm hearing this to this, people want to bet it. Like, there are ways to finagle this kind of before, like, the big national guys come out with it. That's what we try and do on You Better You Bet over the course of the draft process.
It's so funny. I'm sorry, Bulldog. I just got to say, like, a couple of times Nick has tweeted, he does a lot, you know, what is your favorite bet for this game or something? And a couple of times I've responded and Nick has immediately said, that's mine, which is funny because our shows overlap. I don't always get to hear it. And my bet for this draft is Loveland. Same exact thing. Like, that's been my favorite idea this whole time. I'm worried about it now because, like, there's an injury thing with him. And Warren's team doesn't seem to be slowing down, but yeah. I've always liked that bet. So I flatter myself to join right. your level when it comes to these things.
Yeah, the bet does not have to win.
Yeah.
I think we got it at a good price. I think at the time it was placed, it was way more likely than the betting market thought. I still think there's a good chance that it can happen. Like, gun to my head, like life on the line, who do I think is going to go first? I would say that Warren has more outs because I don't think, like, the Jets would take Colston Loveland, but they could take Tyler Warren. So I do think it's more likely that Warren goes, but, I mean, this is all about price, right? At a big plus money price, I love the bet on Colston Loveland to be the first tight end. That price, for what it's worth, does not exist anymore.
Nick, we do a weekly thing with Sam Paniatovich from BetSweats, and we were talking, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago now, second quarterback off the board, Milroe. That was the one that, and the number was really big.
Like 80.
Plus, yeah, right? Like, really nice. And, like, you know, that's my kind of action. Like, it's probably not going to win, but I think that is still, I think there's a chance that could happen. Like, this, whether people believe in Sanders or not, I don't know about Jackson Dart, but Milroe, it seems like there's more and more. He's the best athlete. He's the best. He's got the highest ceiling of anyone. And I don't know, in a world where we saw Penix shock and the Falcons shock everyone with Penix last year at 8 overall, I feel like Milroe's live for at least a chance. Like, if I were going to drive to Pennsylvania or knew someone in Pennsylvania, that's the action I think I would want.
I would caution against like a Penix Milroe comparison, like wildly different prospects.
Oh no, I know, I know.
Yeah,
I'm just merely like talking about just the concept of a team falling in love with a guy enough to do it like that early.
Sure, I guess, but like the idea I even was like Penix was going to go in the first round. I just didn't. No one thought Atlanta was going to take him. I would just say this, and this is my best guess right now, and I want to be clear, like, it's an educated guess what I'm about to say. But this is, it's still a guess. I'm not in any of these GM's heads. I talked to a ton of people, and I think I have a pretty good idea of how this is going to go. But it could not go this way. Like, it doesn't have to go the way that I'm going to say I think it's going to go right now. So here's my best guess at this moment as to how the quarterbacks are going to go in the draft. Like, Cam Ward's going one. Like, that's done. Like, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's happening. The Titans are taking Cam Ward. I would not be shocked if Shedeur Sanders fell out of the first round. One of the consistent things that I have been hearing, and I buy it, so I don't think it's BS. People I trust, a number of people I trust all say this, and pretty much everybody says it, that Shedeur Sanders, and it doesn't mean that he can't or won't be great in the NFL, that he has turned teams off with his attitude in these pre-draft interviews. Now, I heard what you guys were saying before I came on, that, like, you know, some of this could be, you know, anonymous stuff, like, before the draft to try and drive someone, like maybe a team would put that out there that wants to take him, right? So he falls a little bit. I don't think that's what this is. I would not be shocked if Sanders had a big draft slide. Also, for what it's worth, he's not attending the draft. He was invited to attend, turned down the invitation. So my best guess right now is that Sanders is not the second quarterback taken, which brings us now to the Jackson Darts of the world, to the Jalen Milroes of the world, and the Tyler Shucks of the world. Tyler Shuck, whose name is spelled S-H-O-U-G-H, but pronounced Shuck,
somehow.
I'm out of Louisville, is almost 26 years old, like, 3 injury-riddled seasons at Louisville. Like, no one talked about him for months. Like, if you're not, unless you're a huge college football fan, you had no idea who this guy was during the college football season. Now is being bandied about as maybe being, like, the second quarterback selected in the draft, where, you know, I have heard like that the Browns love Tyler Shuck, and they have Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett now. It would make sense they'd want to add a rookie, that maybe they take Shuck at the top of the second round, maybe trade back in to the end of the first round to select Tyler Shuck. I've heard that the Giants like Shuck, and the Giants also like Jackson Dart. Those are coming from two different people that I respect, so this is just, you know, kind of like a shrug emoji a little bit. And Milroe does make a lot of sense for some teams. Like, I think he's more of a Giants quarterback than he is like another team, just because, and this is me dot connecting here, and this is where you kind of get into trouble when you talk about the draft. Now, here's my opinion. My opinion means nothing. Like, all it takes is one GM or coach to disagree, and I'm wrong. But Milroe does seem to fit like the Brian Daboll prototype, right? Yep.
Josh Allen, like lots of athleticism. Yeah.
Correct. So if I had to guess right now, if I wanted to make, you know, like a plus money bet like you're talking about, I can't believe that I'm saying this. I would take a shot on Tyler Shuck to be the second quarterback selected.
He played college football in 2018. Like Kyler Murray played.
He's like 26 years old.
Josh Allen was drafted in 2018.
I mean, just look up the 2018 college football season on Wikipedia, and the names are like guys that have been in the league forever, it seems. Right. Trevor Lawrence, right. Kyler Murray to CeeDee Lamb. Nick Kostos, our guest here on the West Her Hotline. Do you have any thoughts on the Bills, either from a betting standpoint or just in general? Almost all of our conversations with analysts this season, Nick, have revolved around defensive line and cornerback. But, you know, you run into the occasional analyst who thinks that they could get a little crazy.
I don't think they'll get crazy. I think that, you know, most likely I would say secondary, which could be safety as well. Malachi Starks is a name I've heard a lot about in correlation with the Buffalo Bills. So defensive line slash edge is the betting favorite at You Bet Show sponsor BetMGM. I think corner and safety are both more likely than defensive line. And I want to be clear again, this doesn't mean that it's going to win, just that that's the bet that I would rather place. I do not think, because I've had some people ask me, do you think the Bills could take a running back in the first round with the James Cook contract drama, which I think would be absolutely insane. I think Ray Davis is awesome. I think Ty Johnson's awesome. Like, they definitely do not need to do that. I guess, you know, if, like, one of, like, the big receivers fell, like, for some reason, like, Abuka is on the board, or Matthew Golden, or Kent McMillan, which I doubt that any of them are still on the board. Like, you could make a case that maybe they should go do that. But, I mean, you would expect Keon Coleman to emerge, you know, in his second year coming up here. My best guess is a member of the secondary for Buffalo, a corner or a safety, if I had to guess.
Yeah, Starks, more and more, this has been like a Starks week. I don't think I'd seen him mock to the Bills ever one time before this week, and now it's popping up pretty regularly.
Look out, then.
So I wonder if there's something behind that, like you're saying, like you're hearing from people, or if it's just, you know, people throwing darts and they haven't picked Starks to the Bills yet, so I guess I'll try that.
I don't think it's that, but I will say, I don't want to call it groupthink. That's not what it is, but like, and this is going to sound, again, like I'm elevating myself to the level. It's just not meant to be what this is. But, like, I'll do stuff on You Better You Bet on Tuesday. And then on Thursday morning, like, an insider will tweet, like, don't be surprised if this happens. That's not to say, like, Nick Kostos, I'm so great. It just means that everybody talks to the same people that are in these circles. Like, we all talk to the same people. So I think it's less like dart throwing and more like, yep, someone's heard something, and then they pass it to someone else, and all of a sudden it's spreading like wildfire.
Right. Before you go, Nick, so the Bills' win total is not only a lofty 11.5, which, of course, they've cleared a couple of times here, but also at like minus 145-ish toward the over. It seems like, you know, the Bills have set a standard that they've met consistently in the regular season, but maybe the market is saying here that we just all hate the rest of the teams in the division. That there's no way they won't win, what, five games in their division or something like that. And I'm not saying that has to happen, but that's sort of how I look at their win total. I'm not somebody who's ever comfortable betting, you know, over 11.5 wins for anybody, just with an injury or whatever, the randomness of the sport. What do you think of the AFC East, their number, et cetera?
I agree with everything you said, all of it. Could they win 12 games? Of course. Would I ever bet it? No. It does not leave you a lot of margin for error. I also think the division is terrible outside of Buffalo. And I said this when even like before the Patriots hired Mike Vrabel, when we felt like it was going to happen. New England's going to be the second best team in the division this year. I like the Jets are in like a huge rebuild. Justin Fields stinks. Like, he's bad. They're going to be bad. The Jets are not going to be good. I think the Dolphins made a massive mistake not firing Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer this offseason. A team with no identity, that's not physical, that can't beat good teams and can't play in cold weather. Like, and the offense got figured out last year to the point that, like, Jaylen Waddle's not even involved. And Tyreek Hill's unhappy. I think they're going to stink. So if the Patriots are going to be the second-best team in the division, and for what it's worth, I think Drake May is awesome. Like, that roster isn't even close to contending with the likes of Buffalo. So I think it's extremely likely, pending Josh Allen's health, right, that the Bills will win the AFC East again. Like, could they go 13-4? Absolutely. They will be a playoff team. Allen will be in contention for MVP. But I think you guys know my opinion on this. And I'm not a troll saying this. This is my objective opinion. I tell it like it is. I don't think the Bills will ever win with Sean McDermott as the coach. In the history of this league, we have never seen, and the same goes, by the way, for John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson, same draft. We have never seen quarterback coach pairings together for this long that haven't won yet that end up winning a Super Bowl. Like, how many times, and I know, like, Bills fans don't want to hear this, but, like, this is the truth. How many times do you have to get your brains beaten in by the Kansas City Chiefs before you say, let's try something different? And you're never going to fire the quarterback because he's one of the best players in the league. I think it is a huge mistake for the Bills to continue on with Sean McDermott. I wish he were the coach of my favorite team, the Giants. He's not a bad coach, just that, like, the expiration date has long since been hit here, in my estimation. So, like, congratulations to the Bills on their 12-5, 11-6, 13-4 regular season and playoff appearance. And see you in January for the next playoff meltdown. And I don't say that with glee. I just think that's what's going to happen.
Well, as you know, you haven't been wrong yet.
You've got history on your side. Like, there's no question about that.
I saw you all year be like, I don't care. Chiefs, I don't care. And that's what happened. Nick.
Well, it was great up until the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So.
No. Yeah. At least in terms of the AFC. Nick, I know you got to run. Your show's coming up. Thanks for your time today.
You got it. Wishing you guys and all your great listeners Minimal Sweats winning bets the absolute very best of luck. Say hi to my guy, Sammy P, for me.
Okay. Very good. We will. Thanks, Nick. Nick Kostos, You Better You Bet, which is coming up at 4. And he and Sam, I don't know if it's like always, but we're together on Sundays during the football season co-hosting. Chris Trapasso coming up at 4. More on the draft. We'll talk about Malachi Starks.
More?
Can you stand
There's
it?
More?
Don't answer out loud. Can you stand it? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Christian Benford also next hour. This is WGR.